We are live. Welcome back to Open Crypto, the news channel where we talk about all things cryptocurrency and finance. We have a ton of things to talk about today. We just got the CPI numbers coming out from the Federal Reserve. Of course, they're always rigged as usual, as they, I believe, took gas off this time from the inflation numbers. But we're still going to take a look at what those numbers are. Of course, there's other news going on in the market right now. But I want to show you guys what's going on with my social media currently. I am on Linktree. You can look in the link in the description to my Linktree to where you can find me on basically all social media platforms. So if you're interested in following me specifically on Twitter is where I am the most active, check me out there. There you can find a bunch of retweets that I usually have, and sometimes I'll tweet out when I'm going live and things like that. So you can kind of hook up with me that way. So getting that out of the way, looking at what's going on with the actual price action of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency right now, we are having a slight down day today, and I wouldn't say very slight. We're down about 7.5% looking at the price action of Bitcoin right now, sitting at about $39,100. Bitcoin dominance sitting around 42% right now. Overall market cap of all of crypto sitting at about $1.769 trillion in all of, not DeFi, but all of cryptocurrency right now. Ethereum's down about 1/3% right now, down to $2,600 currently. BNB has broken below that $400 level once again, down about 7.25%, down to $365 right now. Looking at the rest of the market, things are bleeding out quite substantially, actually, with Monero down about 11.8% right now. And looking at some of the top gainers and losers of today, first we'll look at some of the top gainers. Icon is doing fantastic right now. OMG Network up about 11.9%, but Icon by far and away doing the best right now, up 38%, just staggering. So we're going to have to probably find out later what's going on with that one specifically. It's up to 91 cents, almost trying to break that dollar level, which we haven't seen. I don't think we've ever seen that before. But looking at eCash right now, up 6.63%. It's really interesting seeing kind of one of these digital cash products like eCash sort of, do pretty well recently. I'm not exactly sure why somebody would use eCash over something like Stellar or even just Bitcoin itself. I guess it's really cheap transactions, but so do other mainnets. Like Polygon's cheap, Oasis, Rose is cheap, even Avalanche, Solana have cheap transactions. So it's interesting to see something like that do pretty well. Of course, ThorChain's doing good today, about 5% up right now. Looking at some of the top losers, we have Monero is down 13.88% after doing extremely well in the last couple of days here. A lot of the privacy coins are doing pretty good. Monero, Dash, Zcash, Secret Network doing pretty good in the last week, but today it is down to $168. Arweave, of course, one of the high flyers recently, doing pretty well. It's the kind of project that uses Solana. It's based upon cloud storage. It's a lot like Filecoin, but uses Solana and other networks as well. Down about 10.25% today to $33 right now. Phantom, of course, this is one that has been hit extremely hard. A couple of developers left the Phantom project and a couple of other DeFi projects like Yearn Finance. That one was not doing too well as well because one of the lead developers left. And so now it's down 9%. But of course, it has had a massive bull run in the last couple of months. But looking at Secret Network, of course, it's another privacy chain, down about 8.65% today. And that's all we're going to go over for the top losers because I don't really want to get myself depressed today looking at the rest of the market. But looking at what's going with Bitcoin specifically, of course, I'm not going to go over this too much, but not a single buy indicator on the daily chart and a 17.90 order here. Not a single one. Really interesting to see that, down about 6.69% on TradingView currently right now. So looking at the actual chart now, we've pretty much erased all of our gains that we saw yesterday during this kind of massive green candle that we saw from 38,000 all the way up to 42,000, erasing pretty much all of that, sitting at about 39,000. So we've only gained since yesterday about, I would say if you want to put it into a positive perspective, we have gained about 500 points since yesterday. So taking into account this massive drop, And the massive rise yesterday, we haven't really moved that much in the last 48 hours here. Of course, it's Stochastic RSI sitting at a 38 right now. We thought there was going to be some kind of reversal, but it seems that this is not the case. Looking at the regular RSI, showing us that we are kind of in this medium range, of course, the last couple of weeks, but the last couple of days, of course, we've stayed kind of in this level between 39,000 and 37,000. And of course, we're kind of breaking back into that. So not too much of a change there, but looking at the CCI telling us whether we are overbought or oversold right now, we are currently slightly in the sold territory. We're not overbought, oversold. We're kind of in the medium, but we're still a little bit sold. So take that for what it's worth. Now, looking at the four-hour chart here on the indicators, here, it's a little bit better, 15, 10, 1, but not much better at all. Of course, the whole moving average is the one telling us what is going on in the other direction, as you know, per usual. So looking at the actual chart, zooming in here on TradingView onto the four-hour, we can see that the stochastic RSI has bottomed out right now, so we'll see if we actually hit the bottom here. The regular RSI is sitting at 44, so not too bad, and then the CCI is in negative 28, so kind of the same story we're seeing on the daily chart. But looking at the actual price action of Bitcoin on the four-hour chart, we're seeing things kind of, you know, ease down just a little bit in the last couple of sessions here. About in the last 16 hours, things have stopped crashing. So hopefully we see this continue kind of sideways for a while, if not kind of break up once again. But, you know, I was really hoping for some kind of breakout to, you know, sustain. Hopefully we're going to break up to 42,000 and then 45,000. But as you can see, we're kind of sitting in this range between 41,800 and 38,400. And as you can see, this has kind of been used way back in the day. This has been, you know, a couple lines of resistance going way, way back, even to the last, you know, the early beginnings of the bull run. Of course, back in January of 2021, we used this resistance line, broke below it, and then again in February of 21, and then, of course, we used it as backtest resistance in February 2021, and then again in May, and then again in July, and then again in September, and, of course, we bottomed out on December 3rd or 4th, when that day that we had that massive red candlestick that completely dumped the market from 57,000 all the way down to 42,000. And then, of course, we used that again once in January. So I tend to believe that this resistance level is, you know, pretty substantial. I think that, you know, these three lines here are going to give us a pretty good, you know, gauge on where we are. And of course, yesterday we saw a massive green candle kind of, you know, hit the top of it and broke back down into this kind of bottom channel that we're seeing right now. So we're sitting in between currently $38,000 and $40,000 in price action. So we'll see if we can break above this. Hopefully we don't have to keep continuing to test the bottom of it. Hopefully we don't break down below it. But that's all I have to say on in terms of price action here, looking at the charts. Looking at the entire value locked into all of DeFi right now, I'm going to refresh my page right now because things change very drastically sometimes. But we are seeing that we are sitting at $159.5 billion locked into all of DeFi, adding double count, that's about $199 billion. So take that into account. But looking at the 24-hour change, we're up 0.78%. Sorry, not 7.8. That would be huge, but 0.78% in the last 24 hours. So even with the massive negative price action of cryptocurrency, DeFi is still continuing to kind of grow and kind of go sideways for a while, of course. So things aren't exactly negative here. So if you're into yielding, if you're into lending, things aren't looking too bad. Of course, yields are a little bit lower than they used to be. And same with the lending rates. People don't want to borrow quite as much because we're not in a complete bull market right now. We're sort of in this crab sideways market. So that's really all I have to talk about on DeFi Llama, of course. We can look at the chains here for a little second. Looking at Ethereum, we're sitting at about 52% dominance right now over the entire DeFi ecosystem. Terra's at number two at 10.5. Binance Chain, Binance Smart Chain is what they still call it on here, is about 7%. Avalanche, 6%. Solana, 3.8%. Phantom, 3.8%. Almost the same as Solana here. Tron, of course, Polygon, Kronos, others, and so on. But looking at what's going on with MarketWatch right now, the stock market is not looking too good today. As I'm getting pop-ups right now, Deutsche Bank did something, I don't care. The Dow is showing us that we're sitting at 32,900 right now in terms of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, as MarketWatch is telling me. So we're down again today, 1.14%. S&P is down 1.36%, and the NASDAQ is down about 2%. Gold actually going up a little bit today, 14 points. We're above $2,000 once again, 2002 right now. And oil is up again today, up about 1%, of course, dropping massively from its all-time highs at about 130 or 140, depending on what exchange you're on. So we've dropped about either 30, no, I would say 20 or 30 points, depending on which exchanges you look at. So hopefully oil continues to come back down, because this is hurting everyone. This is hurting everyone all at once, and it's a terrible situation. Maybe perhaps it's not hurting the people who own all the oil companies and own all the oil deposits, but it's hurting literally everybody else at $109 per barrel. Last year at this time, I believe it was something like 60, if not even lower than that. We can look, though, looking at the chart here on the price of oil on the 1 year. 1 year ago today, it was about $66, so I was almost right on that one. But yeah, things topped out, at least on MarketWatch, showing us at about $123 here. Of course, this doesn't aggregate everything, but, you know, like Brent crude, I believe, will hit $139, and that's, of course, Brent crude is out of England here. But looking at the actual gas prices, they have continued to skyrocket because these follow about, I would say, 36 to 48 hours behind the actual price of oil. So right now, the average gallon of gas in the United States is higher than I believe it's ever been at $4.31. In places in California, it's sitting at $5.70 right now. In some places in California, of course, it's, you know, above $7 actually, but the average in California is $5.70. And I don't live in California, but I think it's just interesting to look at where it's the most expensive. And if I do believe, I think Kansas is the least expensive right now at $3.81. It definitely changes depending on, you know, what the circumstances are of the economic situation of the country. But I believe that Kansas is the most inexpensive right now. But looking at the historical averages, of course, yesterday was $4.25. So we've gained another 6 cents since yesterday. Week ago average at $3.72. Month ago at $3.47. 1 year ago at $2.81. Pretty unbelievable right there. This is just, I can't even comprehend this really to its fullest extent right now. But looking at CNN Business's Fear Greed Index, this is what the stock market is showing here. Extreme fear sitting at a 16. Now, I was going to bring up the crypto one, but that's kind of lagging right now. So it's not going to give us a very good story. If I had to guess, we're sitting at around a 22, but doing a little bit better than the CNN Business Fear Greed Index. Right now we're sitting at a 16, looking at the stock market and overall junk bonds, stock prices, just everything. So that's not looking too good. And of course, we have to talk about the biggest thing today, the biggest news story that just came out. Inflation in U.S. over past 12 months rises to new record. Biden promises help. Does he really, though? On March 10th, the inflation in the United States continues to show annual increases not seen in 40 years due to a variety of factors. The Labor Department said in its monthly consumer price index on Thursday that inflation rose 7.9% in the 12 months ending in February. That's the steepest 12 months increase since 1982. From January to February, inflation rose 0.8%, the department said. The 12-month increase has been steady rising and now the largest since the period ending in January 1982. Without food and energy prices, inflation increased by 6.4% over the last 12 months ending in February. The energy index rose 3.5% over January and 25.6% since February 2021. So energy costs are up 25.6% in 1 year. Absolutely unbelievable. $4.32 a gallon for a gallon of gas. And of course, they use the core CPI 6.4. We're going to take out energy and food. Well, how do you expect, what even matters at that point for people? If you take out food and energy, that's what people, you know, need to live. So why would you even take that out of the inflation numbers? What are you looking at? It doesn't really make any sense. Oh, because they're volatile. Well, that's what inflation also is also the volatility of the dollar and the value of the dollar over time. So you also have to take that into account. But yes, we're seeing inflation continue on forward. Me, as well as many other people in this kind of sphere of finance on YouTube and other social media platforms are and have been saying that this inflation is going to continue because even though the Fed might be, you know, putting on the brake to quantitative easing, they still have not raised rates. They still are doing nothing and they probably can't raise rates, but we will get into that. But looking at the actual inflation numbers, we know it's much, by far and away, larger than 7.9%. It's bigger than 8%. Well, looking at the price of houses, food, car, you know, gas, cars, everything, clothes, it's well above 15% at this point. If I had to guess, it's somewhere between 18 and 24%. Now, that's just my estimate. You know, many people are going to have their own estimates, but just from looking what I buy, looking from what my life, you know, what my life costs, it's gone up about 18 to 24%, probably even more than that. Because of all the gaslighting by the Federal Reserve, you know, saying it's only 8%. Yeah, it's much more than that. The average price of a good, look at fertilizer, right? That's up, that's literally 100%, 120% more expensive than it was last year. How can you say that it's only 8%? What goods cost only 8% more than they did last year? I can't really find any. But yeah, of course, if you look at shadow stats, the way that they calculated inflation back in the 80s, and you compare that to now, it's sitting at about 16%, maybe 17% at this point. But I think we're even above that at this point. Looking at time here from MSN, why most crypto backers are excited that the Biden administration is wading into digital currency. So we saw yesterday they came out and did a whole thing, and Joe Biden did a whole thing, executive order on cryptocurrency. Basically, there's six reasons why and six reasons to this, you know, primary areas to this executive order. One, consumer and investor protection. Two, financial stability. Three, illicit finance. Four, U.S. leadership in the global financial system and economic competitiveness. Five, responsible innovation. And six, equal access to safe and affordable financial services. So this isn't really negative at all on cryptocurrency. The only one that I can really say is, you know, are somewhat negative is probably two and three, the financial stability one, because if they come out and try and figure out that, you know, all cryptocurrency is bad for financial stability, that might be FUD. And then three, with illicit finance, of course, way more illicit finance happens to even just a larger magnitude, even in relative size to financial ecosystems inside of the U.S. dollar system than actually in cryptocurrency. You know, we see Deutsche Bank doing backroom dealings. We do that. We see them doing money laundering. Look at the Panama Papers. Look at Wells Fargo stealing money from their own customers. This stuff, you know, happens all the time in, you know, traditional finance. So they're trying to kind of come out and say that, oh, you know, Bitcoin and crypto might have some illicit properties to it, so people can make money off of theft and things like that. And it's like, of course, every single sector of the economy is always going to have some bad actors in it. But I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But this is looking pretty good for us in terms of this executive order. Many people in cryptocurrency thought that they were going to try and ban some sort of mining or ban proof of work mining. They were going to try and ban, you know, ICOs and things like that. But what we're seeing is that's not the case. We're seeing them kind of come out in a positive note towards cryptocurrency. Basically, what this does is it Biden is basically telling the CFTC and the SEC and many and other three or four letter organizations to kind of sort this out and figure out who needs to be in the lead when it comes to the regulation of this. So really nothing is actually happening here. So that is good news, kind of. Looking at what Blockwork said, in the last 24 hours, three countries have made big decisions and sweeping changes in cryptocurrency. The U.S. wants to lead crypto innovation. Of course, in the executive order, they talk about wanting to lead. Dubai creates a crypto legal framework. So now Dubai is coming out and regulating cryptocurrency. And I don't really like the word regulating because it's so broad. It's more of just like putting it into frame. And I guess you can consider that as regulation, but most people think regulation is all the government's going to come down and, you know, strike down on some certain thing. But no, I guess it is, you know, kind of just framing things. So Dubai creates legal framework. South Korea elects a pro-crypto president. So we saw the elections in South Korea earlier. They elected a pro-cryptocurrency president, of course. You know, I believe their last one didn't really know about it or didn't really talk about it. But this guy is pro-cryptocurrency, so that is extremely good for South Korea, hopefully. And they have some really interesting crypto laws. I think it's taxed pretty heavily there. So hopefully this president can kind of do certain things and manipulate certain laws to hopefully you know, make it a lot easier to invest in cryptocurrency in South Korea. Looking at Blockworks, again, just in, Dubai Financial Authority proposes to exclude and prohibits a CBDC legislation draft. So what we're seeing is now Dubai is coming out and saying, we don't want a central bank digital currency. We don't want, you know, any kind of digital currency like that. What we want is more like Bitcoin. We want people to invest in Bitcoin and then invest into our economy through that. We're seeing that, you know, they see CBDCs as, you know, pretty evil, as well as I do. And many other people say CBDCs kind of look evil, central bank digital currency. Basically, it's like the dollar, except on their own private, I'm not even private, but their own closed ledger system, to where you can't even audit it, to where you can't even look at it. And now Dubai is saying that, no, we're never going to have a CBDC. That is evil. We don't want anything like that. So this kind of is this, in my opinion, is a positive thing for cryptocurrency in Dubai, as well as the rest of the UAE. So that is good there. Looking at Blockworks, again, coming out with tons of articles today and tons of tweets. New Thailand multi-billion dollar SCB becomes the world's second major bank to enter the metaverse. So now we're seeing that we saw, I believe it was JP Morgan actually created a bank in Decentraland, and now we're seeing Thailand do multi-billion dollar, you know, SCB come into the crypto sphere and sort of set up a bank in the metaverse. I don't exactly know the details of this quite yet, and we will learn more in the future, but we're seeing now Thailand become extremely friendly. I believe they just got rid of the VAT tax on cryptocurrency. They got rid of a bunch of taxes on crypto, so it's they're making it a lot easier to invest in cryptocurrency. Of course, they just put it onto their stock market. So that's really cool. And that's really good for Southeast Asia and for Thailand specifically. But looking at Fox Business here, BlackRock's Larry Fink says U.S. allies will win economic war against Russia. So why is it that BlackRock wants, you know, this kind of economic war? And why are they putting it in terms of this? And really, I think that it is an actual economic war on Russia. Of course, the U.S. pulled a ton of its resources out of Russia. Of course, McDonald's, you saw Starbucks and a whole bunch of other companies pull out of Russia, of course. And a lot of it has to do with just, you know, how they look internationally. And maybe they're... you know, corporations probably won't do so well because of the situation. But what we're seeing is now people, you know, calling for the, the whole end to this, this Ukraine war, which this whole situation in Ukraine should absolutely come to an end. War is a horrible situation. And I've been saying this for a while, that war doesn't need to happen. But what we're seeing is something much worse is happening to the rest of the world. And not obviously relative to the people in Ukraine who are suffering, but, what is happening to the rest of the world now doesn't necessarily need to happen. The United States didn't need to completely embargo and shut Russia off from the traditional financial system. And what this is going to do is actually hurt everyone in the world more than what it would have had America just put on some light sanctions or, you know, slap Russia. But now they're completely, you know, cutting off their own leg by taking them off of the SWIFT system. And now people are going to become more economically unstable because of this whole thing. And now we're seeing people say, oh, we need to beat Russia in this economic war. Why don't we end the economic war? Why don't we try and work with Russia and try and figure things out rather than just full frontal attack? It's not really going to help anybody. Of course, the people who are making a lot of money, it's helping. You know, the Saudi princes, the people who own all of these large mega corporations, are doing pretty well. But for the average American, no. The 10-year Treasury yield approaches 2% as U.S. consumer prices rise to fresh 40-year high. So what we're seeing here is people dumping their bonds, making the yields go up. People really don't want bonds. They're becoming extremely inexpensive now at this point. People don't want to buy Treasury yields because inflation is completely crushing them. If we're seeing inflation at 8% and you're only yielding 2% on the 10-year, you're losing 6% a year. That's pretty horrible. So there's really no reason to buy Treasuries anymore, especially looking at what has happened with Russia. Of course, the U.S. has seized a bunch of Treasuries and a bunch of assets from Russia, basically meaning that these aren't even safe investments anymore if you stand against the U.S. government. So that is something to take into consideration. Looking at what Zero Hedge posted here, U.S. 30-year yield raises to 2.39%, highest since May 2021. So we're seeing that the 30-year has absolutely exploded in yield, meaning people don't want them anymore. The people are just dumping these like crazy. You know, people asking, what does this really mean? Well, what do you think happens when the interest rates go up due to inflation and the Fed ending bond purchases, but not because the economy is getting stronger? Basically, the Federal Reserve is doing this to try and actually, I don't even know what the Federal Reserve is trying to do anymore. I think they're trying to stop any sort of global recession. And they're basically like a cornered dog at this point, trying to nip and bite at anything they can do to try and sort of stop this economic devastation that's about to take place. That's about to happen. And there's really nothing the Fed can do at this point. And we're seeing yields completely collapse in terms of price, but the yields are going up. So, you know, that's okay. No, but inflation's 8%. So if you invest in a 30-year bond, which you're taking the most risk by buying the longest, horizon bond, you're only getting 2.5%, less than that. You're losing, 5.5% a year on the best bond you can get, the most secure bond. Why would you do that? No, people are asking themselves that question, and now people are deciding to get rid of their bonds here, which is horrible for the U.S. dollar. Zero Hedge, global financial conditions are now the tightest they have ever been in a decade. So what we're seeing right now is the whole financial system, because of the prices, because of inflation, is now constricting. And really what this means is that there's actual, in true terms, less liquidity than there was before, actual value liquidity. Now, they can pump out as many dollars as they want. We saw that during the whole pandemic, that they printed trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. But that didn't actually add any real value to the economy. What's actually happening now is the value, because prices are going up because of oil, gas, clothes, cars, houses, everything is restricting on the average worker, right? So the average person now has less value than they did before. And because of that, they're able to spend less value. So what we're seeing right now is the economy is shrinking. The economy is tightening on the average person. People are spending less. People have less to spend because they're, earning less value per single day. And so we're seeing financial conditions tighten. Now, even though they keep printing more money and even though inflation is continuing to increase, we are seeing financial conditions continue to tighten. Now, the Federal Reserve, what can they do about this? Well, can they tighten in order to maybe loosen? No, they're not going to be able to try and twist right to try and, you know, put the cap on the bottle, because what that will do will it completely explode the whole situation, right? And what I mean by that is if the Federal Reserve decides to try and raise rates, that is going to, you know, in a huge way, destroy the GDP of America. Because think of it this way, right? There is already extremely low liquidity, right? So if they decide to limit liquidity even more, that's going to absolutely destroy everything. No one's going to want to take out loans if there's massive inflation. And also, the interest rates are extremely high. What can the Fed do? Well, we're probably going to see what happens to the Federal Reserve, at least within the next 10 years. And it's going to be insane to watch. Please get yourself in a secure economic position. Don't take out high debt. Get rid of all your credit card debt. Get rid of all the debt that you have, and maybe take out a lot of business debt. That could possibly be something that is beneficial right now. Not a financial advisor, but if you're taking out business debt right now, you know, taking dollars that will be worth in spending them on things now that will be worth less in the future, that is good, of course, if it's low interest rate. But, you know, like credit card debt, you still don't want, you want to stay away from that. But what do I mean by all of this is that basically what's happening here is that the actual money supply is keeping up with the S&P 500 in that. The actual true growth in liquidity, and what do I mean by liquidity? I mean actual value. A lot of people just mean money thrown into the system. No, that isn't real value. What the real value is somebody producing value for somebody else. That is the true liquidity. And what we're seeing is the S&P 500 is not gaining fast enough to stop inflation. And because of this, there is not actual any new liquidity in the system. There's no new real value for any average person being created. So what we're seeing is basically the S&P 500 is keeping the same with inflation. Meanwhile, people are seeing that, oh, my stocks are going up. I have a lot more money. You actually don't have a lot more money. You don't even have any more value than when you did back in 1993. So yes, financial conditions are tightening. Certainly they are. And looking at kind of the entire, and I really want to relate this back to, you know, because in my entire life, I have never seen inflation to this degree, right? I'm not going to say specifically when I was born, but you can kind of guess. Back when I was, you know, born, it was around, you know, 2, 3, 4%. And through that entire time, of course, I lived through the Great Recession when I was a kid. You know, even seeing somewhat of you know, disinflation, I guess it wasn't disinflation, I guess it was deflation, as you can consider it. But even though these numbers are sort of rigged, it was probably more just disinflation at that point. But of course, in recent times, I've never seen inflation, you know, this, and probably in this entire country since, you know, the 1980s, has never seen inflation this bad before. In 2021, of course, we saw it break 7% inflation, but in 2022, we're about to see it break 8% inflation here. Absolutely incredible. You have to go back all the way to the 1980s in order to find inflation this high. Specifically, 1982 was the last year that we ever saw inflation this high, and now we are seeing it once again. And this time, the Federal Reserve cannot raise rates. There's nothing the Fed can actually do at this point, because looking at the actual charts here, looking at all of the, since I believe 1954, the last 62 years here, the federal funds rate is basically at zero and has been since 2008 after the Great Recession. And of course, only during, you know, 3-year period, we kind of raised it up to 2%, which is nothing still, because China, of course, has higher rates than that. And many other parts of the world have higher rates than that. Russia's is currently 20%, but I believe China's is 3.2 or 3.6% right now, or something in that range. And America is sitting at zero right now, 0.8%. Ooh, wow, that's a significant change from zero, isn't it? No, but seriously, the Federal Reserve is completely capped out. There's nothing they can really do. I mean, they can lower rates to negative, but that would just cause a worse problem for overall liquidity in the markets. It would begin to tighten, because once you get to a point where people are losing value relative to the entire economy, you have less people generating value, you know, value, right? You have the lowering of the standard of living. You have less value being created. And so if they decide to cause more inflation, we're just going to have this problem even worse down the road. And if we try and fix the problem right now, it's going to cause massive devastation, right? Because looking at the GDP right now, this is of the Atlanta Fed, the latest estimate is 0.5% of the GDP growth of the annualized. So we're seeing that the Atlanta Fed is coming out and saying that GDP growth will only be 0.5%. Meanwhile, inflation is 8%. So really, we're losing 7.5% a year now at this point in terms of value. So in terms of the cost, you know, the standard of living, in terms of everything else, as much, you know, imagine 100% of all the things you're able to buy in a certain given year. Either the quality has to go down by 7.5% a year, or you have to buy 7.5% less every single year. And let's say you even get a 4% raise every year, which is still overshooting it. Okay, so now you're losing 3.5% of your standard of living. Now, over 10 years, compound that. Let's just say it's, you know, 30%. That's completely insane. And this is going to get worse continuing forward. I mean, look at the price of houses. And I've brought this up before, but I want to bring it up again because this is just such a substantial point to make, especially when talking about, the housing market's going to crash. The housing market's going to crash. Well, crash to what? What's going to crash? You think the valuation of these homes are going to crash? The dollar has been collapsing the entire time. This is why home values have only really ever gone up over time, is because they just print more money. The only way for housing to collapse is for just hundreds of millions of people to just go away, because they're not building enough houses at this point. Starts are half of what they were during 2008 and nowhere near enough to what they are to keep up with the growth of population, and especially people who want houses now who are around my age and a little bit older who want to start a family and buy a house. They can't, because there's less houses listed now than even last year. The housing market is hotter this year than it is last year. The average time for a house spent on like Realtor.com or Zillow has gone down from 80 days to 40. The average listing price on Realtor.com for a house is $360,000 to $370,000. I think it's more than that at this point. What's it going to crash to? Are they going to stop building houses? Because if they stop building houses, the problem's getting worse. Anyways, looking at the actual value of a house currently right now, sitting at $337,000 is the average price for the average home in the U.S. Of course, in January, they're showing at $325,000, but every single month, it's growing by about $6,000. Well, the average American makes $3,500. What this means is that the average person cannot afford a house and will not be able to afford a house moving into the future. Imagine trying to save up for a house at this point. No, you save up for a down payment. In foreign countries in Southeast Asia and Eastern Europe, Africa, South America, Central America, even, you know, the Middle East in some parts, you can save actual value. You can work and save value up for a house. In the West, you can't do that. You save up value to get a loan so that you can give your time away to a bank. So by the end of the year, we're going to see housing prices at about $382,000 by next January, which is completely disgusting. The average person makes $40,000. So not even keeping up with that, kind of outstripping the average person by about $20,000 a year at this point, maybe even $30,000. So your average house makes more in value than your average laborer, your average worker in America, by about $20,000 or $30,000 a year. So I don't know what the Federal Reserve can do, but I think there's an entire change that needs to happen, if you know what I mean. There needs to be an entire movement from the euro-dollar standard over to Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, because we understand at this point that inflation is crippling everybody. We need something new. And that's really all I have to talk about today. There's a lot of news going on, and I'll probably do another live stream for you guys later today at around 12:30 or something like that. So if you guys like this video, please subscribe, like and subscribe down below. Check my link tree in the description, and I will see you guys in the next one. Take care. Bye-bye.